This is Sylvester Mackay, and you're listening to the 20-megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello, my name is Sophie Aldred, and you, yes you, are listening to the 20-megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
APP Services, the Marzi at boob1.co.uk present the 20-megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20-megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 475. I'm Adam, and is this an asylum with patients in charge? And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Who was it said Earthmen never invite their ancestors round to dinner?
Mary Lang.
That's no, Mary didn't say it.
That's the way to the zoo. The monkey house is nearly full, but there's room enough for you.
What was that?
We're getting the start of the video.
What's happened to Master?
Can you hear us?
Oh, yes, I can.
Well, what are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing? Why are you playing that music over our quotes?
No, I didn't play over you. Did you quote? Then I'll play the music.
Wait, what was Robert's quote?
I haven't got there yet. That's next.
I'm confused.
You won't be. I'm going to explain things in a moment. You're just very impatient. Anyway, yes, that was The Way to the Zoo by Mark Ayres, who Robert Wrench Jr. told me I should play at the beginning of the show.
No, it wasn't.
What?
That wasn't The Way to the Zoo.
No, not at all.
I guarantee that's what it says. I got it off iTunes. From the Ghostlight original, it says Doctor Who Ghostlight original television soundtrack. The Way to the Zoo.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
I sang
You're thinking of the period song.
Yeah,
it's probably got
a Victorian.
That's not the one. I haven't got input. It's playing it again. I haven't got access to that one. Hey,
did you hear me sing it?
I did. It was much nicer than the one I heard.
So, right, I'm going to sure quote a YouTube version.
And Robert Wrench Jr. He said. Da 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 da. Where is he? I've got to find the thing now.
Thing.
All right. He said, "This is that." No, listen to me. Listen to me. He says, "Hi, Adam. I was thinking, which can be dangerous at times. Maybe you can open your podcast up with the song from Ghostlight, 'The Way to the Zoo.'" So I went to the Ghostlight soundtrack, and that's what it was. Does that explain it?
That's not what it was.
Well, I haven't got any other access to that particular tune apart from the one that when I searched on iTunes, it said "The Way to the Zoo." Ghostlight soundtrack. So that's how we ended up with that bit. Anyway, so
I
Robert Haynes.
Think the full song called "That's the Way to the Zoo."
I haven't got
that's
that one. I've got no zoo. Access to that song at all. Robert
it's
Haynes.
A music hall ditty is what it is.
Is it okay? Robert Haynes.
Of course, if she was a real lady, I wouldn't be in her boudoir.
Right then, now I'm having people coming through in regards to the late start to the feed now. At 6 p.m, I was still at work. So I had to come home from work, have dinner, get changed, set up the podcast. That might explain why I'm a bit late. Everyone's gone very quiet. They feel guilty.
Accept that?
Hope they all feel guilty. But despite the fact that I started work at 7:15 this morning and finished at 6 p.m. and rushed my dinner down, which is the reason why I might be breaking wind quite a lot, because I had to rush my dinner to get here, to sit down in front of you, and then play the wrong piece of music for 2 minutes.
I think that maybe you've been into Reese's book.
That's not an excuse. That's what happened. Excuses are just things to patch
can
over.
Someone send something to the group chat, because I can't. It's not coming up.
Anyway, Lila Robbins says, you're late. I just explained why I'm late. I've only just finished work. I nearly cancelled the show this week because I thought, oh my God, I'm finishing at 6, starting the show at 7. How am I supposed to do that? Have dinner, etc., etc. Terry Marr says, good evening all. Good evening, Terry. And I've also had trouble with Facebook, who wouldn't let me share this video on my own timeline. And Lily Robbins said, Master, what is happening? That's The Way to the Zoo, I think it's called, by Mark Ayers, suggested by Robert Vince Jr. And Laurie Nick says, hugs all, thank you, need that. And then she says, I love that line, Robert. Thank you, I love that line, Robert, too. Yes, Kirby?
I just sent you in the 20 megabyte crew messenger a link to the song.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Why am I not surprised you've done that? Why am I not surprised?
So there, if you want to play
sure
it,
that's
what
the
he was
song.
Suggesting.
Yeah.
There you go.
I don't know what it is about my figure or my style, but every time I walk abroad, the passers-by do smile. I lost myself in Kensington.
We have to play it all.
About a week today.
Just go the chorus.
Well, it's only a 1 minute video.
The monkey house is nearly full. There's room enough for you. Take a bus to Regent's Park. Make haste before it shuts. Next Monday I will come and bring you such a lot of nuts.
That'll do, won't it?
Yes, that'll do. And
That's the one that I sang. Yes.
Thank
and
you,
who's,
Mary.
Who
I knew I could rely on you to sing
Mary
a song correctly.
I think Mary sang it better.
I agree.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
girl.
I did too.
Yes, I agree. Right, this week, viewers, listeners, and such like, it's Ghost Light. So we're going to get straight on with Ghost Light, 22 minutes late, which means I'm never going to finish this show as early as I'd like to. So the show starts with an exterior shot of a spooky house.
I thought it started with the theme tune that you hate.
Not talking about that anymore. And then some rather creepy people. Oh, yeah, there's a lift that comes down, some creepy people, including Sylvia Sims, who looks absolutely stunning, as she always did until she got a little bit older when she bloated out a little bit. But she looks stunning still in this as this sort of rather creepy matron-type person and some servants. Then they go to this sort of door and she shouts through and puts some dinner through the hole and it snatches it away and then some... Then this chap arrives with the sideburns and his hat. Remember? The chap with the sideburns and hat.
Reverend Matthews.
Yes, and then the TARDIS arrives and Ace is sent out wearing standard clothes. This episode. Just have a poke around and make sure it's safe.
She's wearing so few clothes that people complain.
Oh, are they?
Yes.
It's not few, it's just an off-the-shoulder top.
In the Victorian era.
Yeah, she's.
We're all not... saying that she's underdressed.
Okay, well, whatever. Anyway, so so the doctor's got her in this house, and then it seemed like instantly when this happened, I was thinking, first of all, this is one of those night and day scenarios because all the day staff seem to leg it, and then all the night staff come out. Reminded me, or made me think a little bit of that wonderful story and film. Tom's Midnight Garden. It's one of my favourites. I just wish they'd redo it with better actors. Redo it with better actors. It's still a fab film, though, even with the crap actors.
Master?
Yes?
When the day staff leaves, do they always, every time they leave, always complain about heaven help anyone who's still here after dark?
Yes, they do.
Every single day. They must do that.
They do that every day. It's right. Well done, Kirby.
Ding!
No dings. I don't know if I should turn the volume up. It was a bit quiet.
You know what I missed? You know what I missed? Just doing the research this time.
Research?
I missed doing research for
the quiz.
Because this is such a wonderful one.
All right. Anyway, then we meet.
Well, that's Kirby's review, so you can skip him later.
Then we meet.
I mean, if Matthew were on, it would be either one of us would, or even Robert, we would all win the quiz.
So you just wasted a whole minute saying if oh, never mind. And then we meet. Is it Edgar's? I can't remember his name now. Redvers.
Redvers, yes.
Redvers Van Cooper.
That's it. With his long...
Another example of a hyphenated name that probably influenced my hyphenation.
Okay.
Lovely left of Stuart.
And then, of course, the chap with the sideburns, he demands to see... Is it the master of the house?
Reverend Matthews.
Matthews, yeah. But he's being sort of like... What's the word for it? Deflected a little bit from that. And then the young lady of the house turns up, who the one who sung the song, That's the Way to the Zoo. And then...
You know what went through my brain when you said chap with the sideburns?
Mm.
I filled it in with Five Rounds Rapid.
Sounds rapid.
Oh, very good. And then some more sideburns turn up in the shape of the Neanderthal chap whose name escapes
Nimrod.
Nimrod, that's it.
Name means great hunter.
Redvers starts losing his marbles a little bit, starts waving his gun around, and then gets sort of frog
marched. A little bit?
He's lost his marbles.
Yeah.
He was all right the first couple of scenes, and he starts getting a bit aggressive and looking out the window and just went a bit funny.
He held a spear to the doctor and Ace. Yeah. That's not all right.
No. And then the creepy bespectacled bloke turns up. What's his name again? The bloke keeps on like shedding
Josiah.
His skin.
Josiah.
Josiah
Samuel Smith.
Yes, he's quite creepy.
Yes.
And then he shows them all his collection of moths and butterflies. And he doesn't particularly get on very well with the chap with the sideburns. He takes a bit of a disliking to him.
Nimrod?
Meanwhile,
no.
Yes, he does.
Reverend Matthews.
Matthews, yeah. And meanwhile, Redvers has been straight jacketed up in some empty room. And there's a bit of a flash of light, and he goes... And there's lots of skulking around the corridors of the house, and they try to get into the room where this light sort of, lighting.
Master,
hey.
This one looks absolutely beautiful, but this is one of the main sets that I always notice that the set walls are wobbly.
Okay. Ace, meanwhile,
I'm sorry about that.
Ace, meanwhile, has changed into a sort of tux, I suppose you'd call it.
How could you see the set walls? It's so dark.
Yeah. I do like this lighting.
Watch it on the Blu-ray, though.
Yeah, okay. I'm watching it on. Yes, I've got the Blu-ray.
But it's I love the lighting in this story. And what do we get up to? I lost the plot there, actually. Yeah.
Too bad Kirsty's not here for me to gloat.
I'm sure she'll be deflecting every type of gloat you aim at her. Oh, there's some sort of claw. Then we find this spaceship thing that in Nimrod's seems to know how to operate. And they have dinner. And then Ace realizes...
Really fast. So fast I'm having trouble. Oh, one of my quotes...
Oh, yes.
When you passed the whole scene.
Yes.
One of my quotes was going to be, that wouldn't be a Chinese fowling piece, would it, by chance?
Yeah.
I just love that.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway,
you understand where that's from.
Talents Wang Chiang.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Kirby has his bit of showing off, you know.
Yes.
In case it has not been obvious, I adore this story.
Okay.
Marvelous. Kirby, we're just going to save time and skip you later when he asks.
Yeah.
So anyway, Ace realizes that the doctor has brought her to the place that she burned down as a teenager, and she didn't seem particularly happy with this. Then we have a song that Mary might remember. It goes a bit like this.
It's nearly fun when it's room enough for you. Take a bus to Regent's Park, make haste before it shuts.
See, I should have played that bit. It sounds much nicer.
That's the song.
So the doctor's sort of... do you know who he reminded me of in this? Because he didn't have his hat on very often. I was watching him and thinking all this low light. That he was like Phil from Groundhog Day. Or Bill Murray, to be fair.
Who was?
I kept on looking at his hair and thinking, oh, it's Bill Murray. Oh, no, it's Sylvester McCoy.
Why? I don't get it.
Don't care. That's just what I thought. I kept on seeing, especially from the view of the Doctor from behind, I kept on thinking, oh, it's Bill Murray. I know, it's Sylvester. Bill Murray's an actor, by the way, Kirby.
He's in one of my favourite films of all time. Groundhog Day.
Right.
Anyway, so Ace finches and finds a way into the spaceship, and then these weird creatures come out of the corner or somewhere and make her a little bit scared. They look a bit like the creatures from the Rani's TARDIS thing, to be fair.
No, and it looks like the fly.
What actually happens? Yeah,
in the original fly movie.
So anyway, they come...
look like something that they had to dig out because J&T. Wanted a monster.
Anyway, so they come out. Monsters do come out, and Ace gets a bit scared.
Official explanation for them.
Ace gets a bit scared anyway. and then they find in a drawer a policeman, which the Doctor wakes up.
Well, isn't that where everyone keeps their policeman?
Yeah. And the Doctor then starts his sort of lots of manipulation and pretends that. A Geiger counter thingy or radiation detector is a gun and threatens a few people. Sorry, I'm just moving forward a little bit because I can't really. There's lots of sort of flashing.
Boy, we're just going to push our way through this one super fast, aren't we?
No, I'm just trying to pick up something that I can remember from it.
Yes, please.
goodness.
Who's that bloke again? The bloke that keeps shedding his skin? What's his name again?
Josiah.
Josiah, I should remember that.
I read in the discontinuity guide, I have not had a chance to actually test this, but this is theoretically the only Doctor Who story with the word knackered in it.
Okay, anyway, so...
he says knackers yard.
Josiah gets... Because Josiah doesn't like... Initially, he doesn't like light, does he? We forgot to mention this. So he gets a bit funny with it. He's wearing these sunglasses.
A
flash of light is able to get the Doctor to disarm him. And
What light does with one of the maids later, disarms her.
In the meantime, somebody has, because they didn't like this...
No, we're just buzzing past it.
Buzzing past what?
We're just ignoring it.
What?
Interject more of his show-off stuff.
Anyway,
I made a joke, sir.
You did? What was that then?
It wasn't a joke.
Was it a joke? Come on, let's have it then, Kirby.
I said you mentioned someone being disarmed, and I said no, that's what light does to the maid later on. Disarmed.
Yes, I know. That's not the words he used.
I was making a little joke, sir.
Very little.
Ding!
Ding!
No,
yes.
But that did remind me I need to open up my priority jingles.
You just quoted the trouble with tribbles, thank you.
More like...
Right, thank you. I've got my priority jingle folder over. open, not over. Which, we'll play this. Oh dear, I didn't do the first bit. Of course, that's because it was being played sarcastically. Anyway, the chap with the sideburns is now turning a bit apish.
The picture I used at the top of the request for comments.
And I reiterate the fact that Josiah doesn't like him. Hence, I'm sure he's the one that's actually made him turn into an apish creature.
Josiah considers himself above everybody.
The Doctor wakes up the policeman, played by the chap who was in
Frank Windsor,
King's Demons. Frank Windsor,
who recently passed away. I understand.
He did. Yes. So did Des O'Connor. Very sadly, I hear today.
And a footballer.
What footballer died today?
Hold on, I will tell you.
All right.
Now, it was Sylvester's idea.
Right, Clements.
Oh, really? Oh, my God, he's not that old. Okay. Oh, sorry, Kirby.
It was Sylvester's idea to have the policeman eating all the time because he's been basically in a drawer for 2 years.
Mm. Oh, okay. Anyway, so then it's suddenly next morning, and I nearly said Sophie, sorry. Ace is waking up to first class.
Esther?
Oh, jeez.
It's not next morning, it's next late afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And there's a point in which I must remember this. Oh, she's wearing a sort of recognisable frock that whenever you see artwork about Ghostlight, Sophie's always wearing that frock.
Borrowed from a Needham line.
And I forgot to mention, of course, that the butterflies they come to life, don't they? Initially, they're sort of dead. Mm. And they come to life.
Well, they're reanimated.
Oh, whatever. Same sort of thing. And actually, while all the sort of night people all asleep, aren't they, suddenly? Or like, they've suddenly become...
Like they're hypnotised, I think.
Yeah, just sat there. But there's a point
under
in which...
influence.
There's a new Josiah, but the old Josiah grabs... So there's two of them. There's a new one.
Because he sheds... It's like a snake.
His empty husk grabs hold of Ace. And Lillian Robbins said...
I think they've got some kind of telepathic ability because, you know, like control controls the husks as well.
Lillian Robbins says, the only authentic Victorian dress in the story is worn by Gwendolyn.
She's probably right.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's a point in which I'm just moving forward. Oh, then they get into a situation where Control comes out of, because Control was initially
back
something
in.
Else. All right, steady on. It was initially.
Will Control be ladylike?
All right.
Once so much.
And then Control comes out. Now you made me forget what I was going to say. Initially, Control doesn't look like she does when she comes out in her ugly-looking. Weird dirty cloths and she comes out anyway, and Josiah goes and gets himself electrocuted, and that's the end of the episode 3. Hey, Mary.
Yes,
not doing too badly. Episode 3. And then Light appears in the shape of who is it, John Hallam,
with a very effeminate voice.
Yes, initially.
Hello.
Initially, but then he goes a bit more menacing later on.
Master.
Oh, God, yes.
As Laurie Nix and I both pointed out, it looks like Light has come straight from that Star Trek third season story, and the children shall eat. The Gorgon.
Okay.
For that one.
Yeah, so the Light's there, and the Light sort of...
He's wearing a bedspread, though, isn't he?
Being a bit mean and just wants to experiment on everyone and... stuff. He zaps a couple of people, doesn't he, as well? And he sort of he's not very nice. Yeah, I'm just moving forward a little bit. Red was the same. Control.
Light seems a little bit upset.
Yes, who's fiddling? We're gonna hear creaking fiddling noises.
I'm sorry, I was getting something.
What, food?
No.
Some info about the episode that he wants to demonstrate.
Anyway, but while episode 3 is developing, so is
developing.
Control.
Developing?
Control is sort of metamorphosizing from a sort of weird thing into a sort of lady. She gets more and more ladylike as the episode goes on.
But she's under tutelage from Ace.
There's a really good special effect when Light has a conversation with Nimrod and he sort of waves his fingers and these little dots appear. I know it's very simple, but it looks quite effective. And, that's Control, played by... Sharon Deuce. Yeah. I've got a picture of myself with Sharon Deuce taken in Newcastle. Must get around to posting that, actually.
Was she very ladylike?
Sharon is, yes. Not as ladylike as Control ended up being, but yeah. Moving on. I'm trying to find something to sort of grab my attention in regards to the story.
The whole idea of you going through this so fast is to quash me from making comments, isn't it?
No, I'm just trying to find something to grab my interest.
He knows you well.
Right, Kirby, what happens in the rest of episode 3? Because I've completely lost it. Right, episode 3. Well, don't go too in too much detail. Episode 3. Come on.
It's a hard story to describe in detail.
Yeah, I mean, what do you expect?
It's easy enough to describe.
Go ahead.
All right, episode 3, everybody is sort of in fear
Light is told that everything's changing, it's not staying the same, so he goes out and has a look for himself and realises, it is changing.
Yeah, but doesn't he plan at some point to destroy the world, destroy everything?
Yes.
But yeah, because he can't control it, so he wants to get rid of it.
Yeah, there you go then. Thank you, that's a good explanation. Of course, Ace keeps on flipping out because obviously she eventually sets fire to the place, but not now. And then the Doctor has a bit of a conversation with Light, and he doesn't. He starts losing his light and sort of goes a bit grey and dull, and then eventually.
I like that effect too.
Eventually, there's a big bang. Oh yeah, they try and sort of get everyone in the spaceship, don't they? To try and get the spaceship away before the big bang. And the Doctor asks at the end, I quite like this scene, actually.
I wish I'd blown it up instead.
That. So, yeah, that's essentially, I hope I'm not going to upset anybody, but that was essentially ghost-like. Right, okay. Did you want to say anything more before I summarise my thoughts on it, Kirby?
No.
I'm going to wait for your... Oh, you get a chance to speak.
You know, he had stacks of notes, things that he was going to bring up while you were.
Oh, yeah. Well, as long as it's not.
No, I didn't make any notes.
Oh, you didn't?
It's all in his head.
It's all in his head, right. Okay. Lorinick says, you cheeky fiddler, you. Don't know what that means. My hands are here. Here are my hands, so I'm not doing any fiddling. Tim Drury. Where's my thing? Oh, here we are. Why does it not play it from the beginning? Let's try again. He said, my least favourite story of the McCoy era, far too mystifying. And then Neil Jones said, Adam, the cream of the Isle of Wight. Well, I thought I'd put some down the front of my tunic. Right then, my thoughts on Ghostlight. Right, while I was watching it, I was looking at it and thinking, this is really pretty and nicely filmed, nicely acted. But I couldn't engage in the story at all. In fact, I was trying to... I watched it this time knowing that I had... it was reminding me that I think... I can't remember the story. And I saw Kirby posting, if anybody wants an explanation of the story, I can tell you the explanation to it, etc. I thought, that sounds good.
Right,
I'm going to concentrate. I'm going to watch... Oh, was it you, was it? I'm going to watch it and concentrate. And I just couldn't keep concentrating on it. So all I can say, the story for me, because it needs someone else to explain it to me, is terrible. For me personally, let me speak. For me personally, the story, because it's terrible because of that. But to watch, for some reason, it's quite interesting. I quite like seeing the characterizations of these characters that essentially, for me, are not going anywhere. I like the Doctor in it. I think he's great. That side of things, the acting, but it was almost like a sketch show without any funny bits in it, apart from maybe the chap with the sideburns doing his gorilla impression or monkey impression or whatever. But as a story, it was worse than some of the stuff that Chibnall was attempted to come up with, simply because, for me, I think it's the only Doctor Who story I can't get... It's like you're slipping down an embankment, trying to hold on to the side to get yourself back into it. All you have to end up doing is just slipping down an embankment into, at the end of it, thinking, what the hell is that? Why can't I? And I've watched it so many times, and I still don't understand it. And I've actually had someone explain it to me, and I still don't understand it. But, I don't know. Apart from, it's weird, because I don't mind watching it, simply because of how pretty it is. So before we get the full explanation of what it's about from Mr. Haynes, Kirby is itching to say how wonderful it is.
Absolutely. This is probably one of my favorite stories of the McCoy era. It's perfect absolutely perfect. It's and yes, I have to admit, the first time I sat down to watch it about 10 years ago, I was confused as all heck. But it's all in there. Like, I posted this in the feedback, which basically, it's not my words, but it's very close to how I think it. This is from Doctor Who, the television companion. Quote, closer examination of the story, however, shows that all the supposedly missing pieces are in fact present, if rather difficult to spot. It's been pointed out by Julian Knott in something. A script as well-balanced as it was well-packed into three episodes with no discernible padding deserves much praise. After a couple of viewings, it becomes apparent that there's hardly a word wasted and that many key words and phrases have been picked to convey a very specific meaning, such as the doctor's remark that Ace's change of clothes into those of a Victorian gentleman is a metamorphosis. Every action has a reason, every occurrence an explanation. Even the standard defuse the bomb, stop the countdown, firestorm program sequence at the end made enough sense in context and succeeded in rounding the story off nicely. Even if some things are not made clear at the time they occur, they are explained or can be explained at a later stage. Yes, it's confusing, but
read the
it's
next line
one
as
of
well.
The most, it's one of the most dense, fascinating stories. I just adore it. I'm done.
Right, okay. Can I just go back to... You know, when this story came out, everybody had VHS or videos, and this video wasn't available for a while anyway. So anybody who would have watched this without the ability to read explanations about the story...
Recorded it from TV.
Yeah, well, I could have recorded it off the TV. But would have still been mystified with it. So why? It just makes no sense that you'd have to have somebody explain it to you.
I didn't have anyone explain it to me.
I'm not saying...
You
said the first time you've watched it, you were just as mystified as everyone else. Yeah. Imagine being the average television viewer who just happened to watch Doctor Who that night. Isn't a Doctor Who fan.
Maybe more for the fans, I'd
mystified say. Mystified, as some of us were, in fact. Hang on, let's go on. Alan T. Butcher says, that's what they all say about Kirby. It's all in his head. Robert, what did you think?
I was going to... Kirby was reading from the television companion, but he should have read the thing that just came immediately after, which says, Ghostlight is Doctor Who for the video age, a story that can be truly appreciated only after multiple viewings as the subtleties and nuances contained within our legion.
But it's not as like it. You know what I mean? There's certain episodes that we always watch. Like it last time I watched it, but I loved it this time. It's like the last episodes of the last series with Jodie, you know, the Timeless Child episodes. I know a few people didn't like it on first viewing, but liked it a lot on the second view. That's fine on the second view, but I've watched Ghostlight umpteen times and still thinking, I don't understand the story, but it's quite good. Anyway, carry on, Robert.
Well, I'm with Kirby because, I mean, I like stories that can challenge you to watch again to get more out of it.
Right.
And to understand the intricacies of the plot. And, you know, something like, I was just thinking Mission Impossible, the first Tom Cruise movie.
Yes.
That had a lot that, you know, you had to really think about and go back and watch again to find out, oh, yeah, that happened and then blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So I like things that you can get more out of from a second, third, fourth, whatever, how many viewings.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I think I got much of my understanding of this story from Andrew Cartmell's description on the DVD originally. But as the Kirby's reading that quote from Doctor Who Bulletin magazine, or DWB, in the television companion, it does say that that, you know, everything is there that you need to piece together things. It's just, if you take for the fact that there's a spaceship sitting under this Victorian house, this spaceship must have landed there or materialized underneath this house. It had three passengers. It had light, it had control, and it had desire. Light went to do his survey. He's collected all these animals, as you can see, his taxidermy skills are legion. Throughout the house, there's all these stuffed heads. He's been his cataloguing. In this cataloguing, he's getting a bit mad because things don't seem to stay the same. They have the ability to obviously put things in suspended animation. They've obviously picked up Nimrod along the way, for example, a Neanderthal man. Maybe he was, obviously he wouldn't have the time span to live from his age into the present, so he must have been put in suspended animation, just like they found the policeman.
Yeah. So, Robert, are you trying to explain the story to us? Is that what you're doing?
I'm just saying that the clues are there. You can find them by watching over again. You can see.
Yeah, I know.
You've read an article about it that explains it. That's what I'm saying. Yes, if you've read something like that, it explains it. Yes, you can sort of get an understanding of it. But the layman, for me, the layman would not understand it.
Right. So why would we need someone like Robert to sit and read the explanation to us if we're not getting it?
I'm not reading.
You're trying to explain it, and that's the problem. Is the ordinary viewer isn't getting that, so they need it.
Yeah, I think it's good because it's intelligent.
Oh yeah, no one says it's not intelligent.
To think, a lot of the TV you sit down and watch is just mindless dribble, and you're given it's like the Hollywood ending that's got to have this everything tied up neatly in a bow and everybody goes happily sailing off into the sunset. This actually requires you to think and use your brain and work out the pieces of the puzzle. And I think that is good.
Okay.
Yes.
Not every story has to be like it, and not every story is. I'm glad that somebody is brave enough to commission this story that actually makes you think for a change, rather than giving you everything spoon-fed on a silver spoon.
And the other thing about it is that it looks wonderful.
It does.
The first time you watch it. It looks great.
It does.
That inspires you to
beautiful.
Watch it again and get the nuances.
Okay.
Yeah. And I love that it challenges you to watch it again and to piece things together. As I say, not every story is like that.
No.
And not everybody gets to watch it again.
Episodes. But I will say something. Battlefield was a three-part story, and Ben Aronovich was told to extend it into a four-episode story.
Yeah.
This was originally a four-episode story and told to cut it to a three-episode story.
So what you're saying is they got it around the wrong way.
Yeah, I do think that. And I now I've lost my thought.
But, talk about four parts and three-part stories.
It's, having watched the work print with these deleted scenes reinstated, it's hard for me to appraise that because knowing what I know, I can't watch it like anew. I'd be interested to hear someone who hasn't seen the story before watching the work print and see if they get more out of it than if they watch the original three-part story. But, yeah, I'm glad. I love it. It looks great. It's got a lot of nice black sort of humor in it, like, the cream of Scotland Yard, that kind of stuff.
Douglas
and,
Adams
little in-jokes like, never invite your never invite your ancestors to dinner. and just it's well acted. It's got great actors in it and actresses. As Kevin mentioned, looks bloody brilliant. And even choosing that song, that's the way to the zoo. What a perfect song for the story. I quite like it. Except for I do hate things that mock religion in such a way. As though everybody who's associated with religion is dumb and mindless. That's my only sort of nitpick about it. But otherwise, it's so well made, and I'm glad that it requires you to think. And as I say, not every story is like that. And so I'm glad we've got something like this, which is intelligent and requires you to think. And Yes, Judge Francis.
Thank you, Robert.
You know, one thing that makes me sad about watching this one, though, is to know that this was the very last bit of classic Doctor Who that was ever recorded.
Yes. Right, we've got Robert Wrench Jr. Hi, everyone.
Wait.
Hello.
Oh, okay. What? Yes. Nothing!
And then he says, Robert Haynes, loved your explanation of Ghostlight on the Blu-ray feed. Alan T. Butcher said, The clues are there, apparently, yet the writer and script editor didn't have a clue. Then he says, being unclear is a different thing to being intelligent. And then Robert Wrench Jr. says, it is a thinking story, that's why it takes more than one viewing. Now, this is what Andrew Cartmell says.
Oh, Ghostlight, what a wonderful story. And so Mark Platt is a unique writer on the show, certainly amongst the guys I was working with, because he was the only dyed-in-the-wool fan that I actually worked with. All the others were aware of Who, but had come to it as perhaps when they were kids they were into it, but Mark was a real fan. And Mark Platt had been submitting stories to earlier script editors, going back to Robert Holmes, and getting some very good encouraging feedback, as well he should, because he's a tremendously gifted writer. And Ghostlight, I just adore, because I pretty much feel that came off, because it was a wonderful script, perhaps a little too strange and complex to be entirely clear to everybody on first viewing, or indeed through any number of viewings, because it's only a three-part story, right? Yeah. It always baffled me why people were so baffled about Ghostlight, until somebody came up to me at a convention and said, it's very confusing that Control's called Control and she's not in Control. And I thought, if you don't get it that she's an experimental Control, which is the part of the experiment that doesn't change, then that is very confusing. So you sort of don't know what you don't know. So I begin to understand why Ghostlight, which is such a rich and complex story, can be mystifying to people. But I hope, even if they are mystified by it, that they will love the richness of the Victorian environment and the fabulously witty dialogue and the extraordinary kind of exotic alien goings-on. I feel that as a kind of dark, mischievous Alice in Wonderland type story, it has no parallel. And I think we really pulled it off well, because Alan Waring was, I would say, the best director that I worked with on Who, and he did a marvelous job. And the other great strength of this story is that one thing you could guarantee the BBC could do is a tremendous period costume drama, especially when it's a relatively recent period like the Victorian, where all the resources are available. Like if you want Victorian furniture, you can just go out and get it. And because it was all pretty much entirely set indoors, the studio limitations ceased to be limitations and became tremendous advantages. We also had very good lighting on that show, which was crucial, because it's quite a dark and scary and moody show. I think Ghostlight is often at my favorite show changes of the shows I worked on. It's a flexible, fluid list, but Ghostlight is often up there at the top, and it really is an unparalleled classic, because it's so unlike any others. And the wonderful thing is that Mark Platt is not only still with us, he's still writing a lot of stuff, including a lot of Doctor Who stuff for Big Finish. Okay. It's only a tremendous shame that he hasn't worked on the series since it came back. When Russell didn't hire him to write that Cyberman story, I feel that was a real missed opportunity.
So there you go.
Now, we haven't heard from Mary, have we?
No, we haven't.
No.
I was gearing up to that.
She gets the...
Gives me a headache. spending my time frowning at the screen trying to figure out what the Sam Hill is going on during this. It really gives me a headache. And I know that it was recorded. I know that it was put out there in an era when they anticipated that people were going to record it and watch it several times over to, you know, in quotes, get it. Because it is so full of references. I mean, there's stuff in there from past Doctor Who. There's Victorian novel stuff in there. There's Douglas Adams in there. There's Lewis Carroll in there. There's Dickens in there. You know, people can go over and over this story, you know, as many times as they want to watch it and get all that out of it. I just want to sit down and enjoy a story that, yes, can be somewhat complex, but not so dense, not so hard to follow and understand. It is pretty to watch, you know, and the music in it is really good. I applaud the music that's in it. But no, it's way too dense. It's like a project of a bunch of nerds getting together and packing everything that they just love into it and then showing it to the general public and not understanding why isn't anybody else getting it like they are. It takes other nerds, you know, to enjoy this kind of thing. And I did not enjoy as well acted as Ace did as Sophie did her part as Ace. It was not a pleasure watching her suffer, you know, being dragged through this house and these situations, which were all frightening, scary, brought bad memories. And the doctor, it seemed like he was really poking at her to bring out all those bad memories. So that also made it not enjoyable. I know that everything that I've read about it by people who review Doctor Who all say, oh, it's brilliant and all this, but everybody seems to rely on it being explained to them or seeing it numerous times to get everything out of it. And for me, that's not Doctor Who. You know, great for those who enjoy this kind of thing, but I like my Doctor Who, not necessarily too simplistic, but a little more involving than this one was. Like Adam, you know, I love your description that you're going down this chute with nothing to hang on to while you're going through it. It's like, what? You just keep saying, what? What's going on all the way down? So that's me.
Thank you, Mary. All right. Well,
a couple of things. First of all, back because Robert brought up the work print. Yeah. I've stopped with that joke, by the way. We were doing that joke 7 years ago. and Mary doesn't like that joke. Anyway, I watched the work print this time because I have the Blu-ray. I didn't get that much more out of it. It was strange because I've seen it so many times and know all the ins and outs. It was interesting to watch the work print, but it didn't give me any extra insight. Now, the other thing, I just got a text message from someone in Alabama who says,
that could be.
Just woke up.
What?
And so I just told him, get on then.
Yeah. So
hopefully we'll be getting Matthew.
Get on and press the green button.
Yeah.
Can I continue?
Yes.
What?
You're the boss.
I just read Alan Butcher's comment.
right.
What did he say?
He said,
being unclear is a different thing to being intelligent. Then Robert Venture Jr. said, it is a thinking story. That's why it takes more than one viewing. Alan T. Butcher, honey, this child, you got it, Mary. And Robert Vinson is at least the way to the zoo was not as bad as The Last Chance Saloon being played over and over again. Indeed, it wasn't. The song was in and out.
Amen to that, Robert.
There you go. Right then, I suppose we've just about got the situation in the position where we can move on to feedback. Kirby, that's normally over to you.
Yes, hang on. Let me get to the top of the feedback. Robert Wins Jr. Huh?
Sorry, we're keeping you awake.
No,
it sounded like you were yawning.
I was scrolling to the top of the feedback because I was down further.
Okay.
Scrolling Jr., using then, yeah.
Yes, Robert Wins Jr. has a picture of the Doctor and Ace at the dinner table. Says, the Doctor, don't eat the soup, it will change your life. And he also has a picture of Light and says, does anyone have change for a pound? Robert Wins Jr., my review of Ghost Light. Yes. One of the hardest ones to understand without repeat viewing. This is the start of Ace's storyline going to the end of the series. The Doctor and Ace landed an old house in 1883 called Gabriel Chase in Ace's old town of Perryvale. She doesn't know it, but the doctor... What was that?
It was Mary receiving some mail.
Okay. Carry on. She doesn't know it, but the doctor brought her there to face her fear of what happens 100 years later in 1983 when she burnt the house down. Aliens years ago came to Earth to survey it. Josiah Samuel Smith decided to stay and wake up years later to evolve into a Victorian man and come up with a crazy plot to kill Queen Victoria and rule the British Empire.
See, now here we are again. Someone else that has to tell the story for everybody else who doesn't get it.
I forgot about the Queen Victoria assassination plot. Sorry, I should have mentioned that, but carry on.
So did I.
Needless to say, the plan falls apart thanks to the doctor and the help from others. I like Ace and Gwendolyn dressing up in tuxedos in the atmosphere, but the story is meh and falls apart. Control, part of the experiment, lets Light out, who is disappointed with how things are evolving. He kills Gwendolyn and Mrs. Pritchard, who find out they are mother and daughter. He turns them into stone, so they don't change. In the end, Light dies, and Josiah, who is imprisoned, Control, Nimrod, and Finn Cooper take off in the spaceship underneath the house to explore the universe. I love the doctor's line. Even I can't play this many games all at once. So the story is about evolution. I never understood it at first, but after years of watching it, I do now. Mark did a great job with the music. Unfortunately, not one of my favorite stories to watch. I know some like Kirby will love it and others like me may not. My rating is 2 out of 5. Neil James says, Ghostlight. Yes.
Good.
It's about time we visited a creepy haunted house. Production design, costume, music, lighting, and performances all come together to give the story an astonishing atmosphere that terrified me as an 8-year-old back in 1989 and still impressed me today. The whole cast seems to be on the same page in terms of their acting styles, which is remarkable considering I'm pretty sure none of them had the faintest idea as to what was going on, but everyone is great. There are so many wonderful lines I could quote all night. And as an aside, I had trouble figuring out which quote I was going to use. It's a stellar script for dialogue, and McCoy clearly loved delivering them. Hard to choose a favorite, but I will go with this highlight. Yes, let me guess. My theories appall you. My heresies outrage you. I never answer letters, and you don't like my tie. By the way, that was one of my alternates, too. I get chills every time at the cliffhanger at the end of part 2, and I sing that creepy That's the Way to the Zoo song to my dog every morning. Well, she tries to bite me in a friendly dog way, of course. I feel that 3 parts is an ideal length for this tale, but with that said, I'm jealous of anyone who has the Blu-ray and can catch the newly released work print cut. By the way, I've got the Blu-ray. When I watched it today, I kept forgetting to take notes. I was so engrossed. And yes, this is a firm favorite of mine. I do understand it not being every fan's cup of tea, but I completely adore this odd, perfect gem of a story. 5 stars out of 5. And Neil James, yes, you are perfectly correct. Robert Wince Jr. responds, glad you enjoyed it so much. Wish I could say the same. Neil James says, yeah, definitely splits opinion. And is Matthew still not on?
Nope.
Okay. Good night, John.
No, I already read that one.
Yes.
Lori, wow.
Lori. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, there was a craze for murder mystery at home dinner parties. There are also those murder mystery events with itinerant actors that were immersive. I hosted and attended a few of those affairs, and I must say that I wish they had aliens in the basement and Neanderthal butlers. The primordial soup would have tasted better than the leg of lamb and mint sauce that I once prepared for one of those events. American teenagers aren't too keen on mutton. Actually, mutton's not bad. It's the mint sauce, which is good.
Yeah, really, a mint sauce.
Yeah. This one is best viewed intoxicated or slightly... When I first viewed this one a decade after it was broadcast on a fuzzy black and white TV that I'd inherited from a deceased neighbor, best thing to view it on, I reckon, I could have sworn that Josiah was played by Vivian Stanshaw from Bonzos. So I think of this fondly as, what if the Bonzo Doodah Band had made an episode of Doctor Who? Don't get me wrong, I don't hate this one. I like Surreality, if that wasn't obvious by now. I see echoes of it in New Who, when taking a chance on being off the wall and manipulating your companion is more acceptable, by the way. If you look past the fever dream, you'll see some interesting commentary on the Victorians and their need to collect, catalog everything, colonialism, Darwinism, etc., etc.
Can I stop you there?
Yes.
Because the cataloging was actually because I was brought into it because Mark Platt, the writer, used to work for the BBC and he used to catalog the shows or the radio shows.
Yes.
That's how he introduced that plot thing into the thing. So I don't think he was necessarily commenting on the Victorians.
It was a Victorian thing, though.
Yeah, it was. Okay, may I continue?
Yeah.
Hey, Trekkies out there, haven't we seen a friendly angel before who dresses like Liberace? Anyway, I hear Java is nice this time of year. Laters. And then it's for some reason it repeats. That's weird.
Yeah, that's the same thing. Okay, would like to say it a second time?
Facebook does that.
Yeah, don't say it a second time, though, please. Kevin.
No, why not? And then I posted a picture of the Gorgon from And the Children Shall Eat. And Laurie responds, they all shop at the same place, don't they? Gold LeMay Dress Barn. And she has a link to a Do Not Adjust Your Set Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, whatever that is.
Early Python and Goodies.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Before they got together and did.
Robert Wince Jr., great review, Laurie, next. Really enjoyed reading it. The Spirit was played by lawyer Marvin Belli. I remember the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band also was featured in Dr. Demento way long ago.
That's essentially it, though, isn't it? Because everything else is...
Okay, then Lillian Robin says no live feed.
You're all right, that'll do.
Hold on.
Yes?
What about the under the Blu-ray when you posted about Blu-ray?
Okay,
people commented there as well.
Yes, they did.
All right, go on then.
Oh, look at this. From Adam Pearson, this content isn't available right now.
Oh, be quiet.
Oh, my goodness, there's 36 comments.
I posted
that I had just received the Blu-ray. And Alan T. Butcher says, I shall be watching this Ghostlight rubbish, too. Who knows, the version you speak of may be fantastic. And I posted a GIF of the Ninth Doctor going fantastic. He says, even so, it won't make me feel better about it over the last 31 years. Robert Wiss Jr. says, but at least it's better sound and picture quality. Kirsty says, I guess I'll watch that one too. I say, hey, Kirsty, have I mentioned I got the Blu-ray?
Hang on, has Kirsty got the Blu-ray though?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, her buying it influenced me to buy it.
Okay.
And I'll tell you about the interesting exchange I had with her about that later. Anyway, Auntie Butcher says it's got 26 misspelled on the front, though. It's because it says Sylvester McCoy Season 3. I say perhaps they thought it was an equation, 2 into 6.
Goes 3 times.
Whose idea was it that Kirby was to read this lot?
Christy says, about time I got it. Robert Haynes, it's a very good set. This era does seem to have so many versions of the same story. Alan T. Butcher, I had left it unlooked at as I knew we were coming up to watching it now. Robert Haynes, maybe best to only have to watch it once again. Just like Trial with the Time Lord set, doing the podcast has been good in letting me get through looking through those sets at least. Chris Miller says, yay. Yay. Doctor Who doesn't get any better than this.
I'm afraid it does.
Billy Kirkbright says, I've considered getting this. Robert Haynes says, go on. You know you want to. Tim Drury. Yeah, play that again. Go ahead. Play it.
Okay.
No, he only gets the one.
Okay. Most disappointing commentary ever because they failed to explain it. Alan T. Butcher, episode one done. Just a series of unconnected events. Fair enough.
Oh, bloody hell.
Fair enough. Two episodes left to tie everything up. Alan T. Butcher, episode two. Nope, still nothing. The only sensible thing said was, I try and try, but I can't understand. Kirsty says, Alan T. Butcher, maybe you aren't studying it closely enough.
That was good.
Alan says, seems unlikely. Alan says, episode three, I'd like to say that was brilliant, and I have been wrong all this time, but never mind. Robert Haynes says, go on, say it was brilliant.
There were 11 replies between Alan, that.
You want to, huh? Yeah, then there's...
Hang on a sec.
There's your big, your long one. Did
No, don't read that out.
After he says episode three, I'd like to say it's brilliant. There's like... Okay, let me watch YouTube.
Master, try to get Matthew in. He says he doesn't see a call to join.
Oh, ooh. Well, there won't be because he wasn't added to it from the beginning, was he? It would have done. What's his name? Okay. Matthew Summiter, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Matthew Parton.
So how much more of this do you need me to read?
Well, not Robert's Master
Vote
of Blur.
Just the funny bits.
Because he's on the show. Just what the about funny Jefferson bits. Liang? Oh, you got me watching it too.
Right. Oh.
That's it.
Hang on. Where is it?
I don't know.
It's on your...
Liang says, okay, you've got me watching too. Robert Haynes says, yay.
That'll do, innit?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Have you added Mr. Kressel?
I've added Mr. Kressel. I don't know. Are you there, Mr. Kressel? No, he's not answering. Right, then. Then I've got this. I'm going to find out, first of all, if Kirsty's audio is legible. In the meantime, I'm going to send some... Actually, what I'm going to do, Burby... I'm going to send it to you, actually. Yeah. Bear with. This is... Nobody's watching, although, so I won't get into trouble for losing a bit of slickness for the show. If I send Kirby this bit of blurb, then he's doing that, I can work out if this is going to work. So Kirby's going to get the feedback from Terry Miles.
That's unusual.
That is arriving with you pleasantly. There we go. And then I can find out if Kirsty's got... If it's loud enough. Hang on.
Hello, 20 megabiters. Oh, it's well, Kirsty, the Sixth Doctor here, with my review of Ghostlight, or at least my thoughts on Ghostlight. But first, damn tsetse flies. Robert suggested that I get a hold of the Blu-ray. Funny, it wasn't Kirby. No, Kirby didn't have the Blu-ray. That's right. Last Kirby's the Blu-ray. That's right. All right, sorry, moving on with the review. Yes, and so I was able to watch the work print, and that's my first time ever seeing the work print. And it's been a bit since I've seen Ghostlight, and I must kind of agree with most people that it is confusing, but I've always found it kind of eerily entertaining, akin to a Sapphire and Steel episode. There's just more going on that you aren't quite aware of, but yeah, the work print does kind of, it gives me a better feel for what they were really kind of going for, and I really like it. I wish we could have had more Doctor Who like this. The interplay between Sophie and Sylvester in this is fantastic. I like how they've introduced that he's testing her in some way, shape, or form. I know this, I'm not up on all of my what was supposed to happen, etc., but you know, he's quite clearly testing her for some particular reason, and this is a test he's picked out for her, and the whole manipulation of the events, but the Doctor not really realizing what was below. And I love it. I love the Sylvester, the manipulative Sylvester that's quite still, and it, especially when he's wearing the brown jacket, he's not quite so leaping over tables and doing goofy floppy stuff. I like the Seventh Doctor. I like the... even when things get slightly out of control for him, he just kind of...
Control?
But yeah, the set pieces costumes, everything. I mean, it's all stuff that the BBC is brilliant at, but it all helps to set this really kind of creepy, toned, wonderfully put together. I just love this episode. I really do. My appreciation for it, and I don't think it's just the work print. I think it's probably my, you know, my advancing years. Not as advanced as Kirby's, but you know. time brings more understanding, and you've got more patience to sit and watch something and kind of see all the subtleties and stuff. And I've really, really enjoyed this episode. And I do recommend that people watch the work print. It does really kind of help to expand it. It doesn't give you necessarily more answers. It just gives you a better view on the whole story, and you kind of see that what they really were trying to do, and we just didn't see that. And so, yeah, there was more stuff, I guess, that was left on the cutting room floor before it even got to screen. But, yeah, well worth your time picking up the Blu-ray. So thanks to Robert for suggesting that I get this. Thanks to Amazon for getting it here really cheap. I mean, really quick. But I also got $10 off of it. They're doing coupons on Amazon. So check it out. If you do go to go look on Amazon, if you're in the US, there's got a coupon thing on there, and it saved me like $10. So yeah, and it's well worth it to see them talk about the episode and everything. So I should hopefully be back next week.
Hooray.
Live. Unfortunate for you, Kirby, but yes. So catch you all next time. Kirsty out.
No, thank you, Kirsty.
Really?
God. Oh, very good.
Wait, what was that last?
It's, right.
I didn't hear the last bit.
I suppose I've got to play it again, have I? Right, hang on, let's see if I can get it to the... Hello. Right, please listen very carefully. You ready?
But, yes. So, catch you all next time. Kirsty out. Kirsty out? Really? God, that's pathetic.
Did you hear it? Kirsty out, really? God, that's pathetic.
Yes. Now, Matthew says, so I can hear through the window, has froze and announced it's not responding.
I can see him. He's like he's with us, but he's not with us.
And I said, try again. He said, attempting to.
Oh, shall I take him off?
I'll am I here him. Now?
Oh! Yeah, that sounds like
he
you.
Was there. And then
I already used your quote, by the way, so you can't use that one.
Right, as he was saying, am I here now? I was disconnecting him. Oh dear.
You disconnected him?
Yeah, I pressed the button, and then he said, can you hear me now? And he said it, and I heard it, but I'd already clicked on the disconnect bit. Hello, Matthew.
I go through all this trouble to get onto the podcast, and you hang up on me before I get a word out.
Oh,
Matthew, I've already used the quote that you were expecting, so use something else.
Well, I have about 8 of them written down, so...
Yes, I bet.
Yes.
Is there a free lecture thrown in with dinner?
Aren't I supposed to say, and Matthew Kressel, and then he comes and says that? Never mind. That all went wrong.
I think we know it.
Thank you, Matthew. Right. Where do we get up to? We're going to do some feedback. We're doing feedback.
Don't want to hear what Matthew thinks of it before
you do. In due course, Kirby, you have some stuff to read from Terry Miles.
Feedback for Ghost Light.
Yes.
We have a haunted-looking house with staff that are scared to stay after 6 p.m. And they say it every time they leave, every single day.
So does Kirby.
I thought of Rocky Horror when the clock struck 6 and the night staff arrived. All it needed was Tim Curry to walk down that excellent staircase. Sylvia Sims was brilliant, but Frank Windsor was wasted.
What was he drinking?
He was eating all the time. Again, the dark side of Dr. Seven is shown with his manipulation of Ace and knowing more than he says about what's going on. This was a good story, but should have been one more episode long, as it lost itself due to bad editing. There were some silly misquotes like, not tonight, Josiahfina. Linda did not like this one. She found it too disjointed and too many unanswered questions. I myself liked it, as I have read the Target novel, which explained it a lot better than the TV show. Everybody stay safe. Linda and Terry Miles.
Thank you, Linda and
Terry Miles. And as I said, it's all there.
Yeah, all right. You said that three or four times now.
Yes, explain.
Okay, that's fine.
It's true. It's all there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
We have a great responsibility. England is under lockdown for 4 weeks until the podcast finishes the Sylvester McCoy era. Votan, what was the Southampton score?
Southampton beat Newcastle United 2-0.
Why, aye, pet.
Wow.
That is, yes, dear, in Newcastle dialect.
Exterminate.
No, I said dialect. Battlefield by Ben Aronovich.
What? Oh.
The Legend of King Arthur gets the Doctor Who treatment as invaders from another dimension. They have magic there, and their version of the Doctor is Merlin. Probably not E-Space, then. We have the old Brigadier and a new one. The new one has a tempestuous relationship with Anselin, a swordsman from the other dimension.
Am I playing the wrong one?
Yes, you are.
Let's get to try a little tank.
What story did we just
doesn't
watch?
Like
we
it.
Didn't watch Battlefield.
Bessie's back.
The Lady of the Lake.
Right, I'll stop it. But it was nice to hear Ian playing his thing from last week. Mary, are you confused?
Yeah.
No, I was. Okay, right, I've now got, hang on, it says audio the 8th of August. I don't know what's going on here, actually. Let's try. Right, let's click on this one. This looks a bit more up to date. That was fun, though. It was nice to hear that. That was almost like
just
watching Ghostlight, wasn't it, Mary?
One again.
No. Mary?
Yes?
Wasn't it like watching Ghostlight at that particular moment?
A little bit, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I was pounding
and stirring the
attention. Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is in Kirk.
Hello.
Look at it.
We had the Children in Need charity fundraiser on Friday.
We did, yes.
They claimed to have a segment with the 13th Doctor, but it was just her and Mandeep for 1 minute.
It was.
Telling us about the competition.
Which I entered.
Blink, and you'd miss it. Did you see what I did there? Ghostlight by Mark Platt. If you don't like it, then bog off. It's all right. I only watched 2/3 of it. I have reviewed it before. A group of aliens try to catalogue the species on Earth, but they are stymied by evolution changing them before they can finish. They are driven mad by all the constant recounts. Recounts can be really annoying. A Marmite story. Either loved or hated. The Doctor manages to sum it up in the ambiguous final word. Wicked. Bye for now.
Excellent, Ian, because that is the most simplest explanation of Ghostlight I've heard so far. Now, if I'd known that someone could explain it that quickly within a couple of words, I probably would have watched it and enjoyed it, but that was really, really succinct. So, Ian, you're going to get one of these? And it was very nice to hear.
Just use the word Marmite. Yes, it definitely is a Marmite episode.
I used the word Marmite in my request.
Yeah, but
you did.
It's not a major achievement to use the word Marmite.
Right, well, then. I'm having trouble finding Marmite.
Well, I've given Mary far long enough to digest.
when are we going to get Matthew?
Oh, for God's sake. Well, it's fairly obvious we're going to get Matthew. I want him to wake up a little bit, get himself a cup of tea, and listen to Alan T. Butcher's blurb.
All right, Alan T. Butcher writes, "The Experimental Hidden Plot, or How Not to Cut a TV Show." Dear 20 Megabyters, Ghostlight is, of course, a closely studied experiment in explaining what can go wrong with scientific method and taxonomy. Josiah is the subject of the experiment and is meant to be compared with Control. Light is a bad scientist who both fails to establish a double-blind system so that the results can be untainted by his influence, and furthermore, he deliberately interferes with the experiment partway through. The main message we can draw is a powerful one, cleverly integrated into the real-world effect of the show itself by being a failed production. So, sometimes, however carefully you organize everything and obtain high-quality equipment and materials in an experiment can be a complete failure. On taxonomy, it is trying to tell us that classification is not susceptible to accurate final completion, but must be allowed to have flexibility and be left open to account for changes. It should be noted that whilst some suggest that it is not okay to have a story which is not decipherable on first viewing, in fact, it is not okay to have a story which is not decipherable without copious side notes, a novelization, and a legitimate interview with the author. We also learn that Sir Ranulph Fitzwilliam, one-time confidant of King John, survived to the late 19th century, having become policeman light duties, and went on to move to Newtown on Merseyside, changing his name as he was promoted to be called Detective Sergeant John Watt in Z Cars, or was that Z Cars? Okay, Alan, I get the poke. All in all, Ghostlight is a disastrous failure. As an all-studio production, the look of it is fine, and there are multiple examples of good costuming, and none of the acting performances are at all bad. Sadly, despite having all this going for it, the finished piece is hopeless. Clearly, it was developed from a much more ambitious story, and this was fundamentally changed to fit a more mundane scope, albeit still significant to Ace, whose ongoing story is perhaps the only successful thing dealt with here. At every stage after that, a machete was liberally employed to achieve an ever-diminishing minute count. Even with all this injudicious pollarding, it remains a pretty high-concept enterprise. But sadly, by the time it reaches the eyes of a viewer, many basic points of the plot are absent, and the multifarious characters and events lurch around like primords from Inferno in a stream of consciousness, which, whilst less embarrassing than the greatest show in the galaxy, is sadly less coherent. What a fantastic guest cast it is, though, and their dialogue is good. In fact, there really isn't a single bad thing in this, but the finished product is still woeful. If anyone can find an antonym for synergy, then that is what this is. This story is obviously several episodes too short because they didn't manage to show the whole story on screen. Next up, Doctor Who and, in quotes, live from the Danelaw, whatever that is, the sale of the ninth century, or just a minute, who is this Fenric bloke? Those are my
sale of the ninth century. I believe.
What is that?
Danelaw.
Live from the Danelaw. What is that?
Something to do with the Curse of Fenric, I suggest.
Okay.
Right then.
By the way, I thank you, Alan. I appreciate your thoughts about it. I completely disagree with you, but I still plan to buy your book, A Closely Studied, whenever that comes out.
Yes.
Just rip that page out.
Anyway. Matthew?
Yes, Adam.
Did you manage to get yourself a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, so you can settle down and tell us what you think of Ghostlight?
I think I have. Well, I've had half a soda, so it's probably about as awake as I'm going to be for the moment. I'm going to completely disagree with what Alan T. Butcher just said, that the idea that somehow the story is incomprehensible. Because it's not. I mean, there is enough there, and it's certainly in first viewing of it in 2007, 2008. There's enough there you can follow the story. The problem, in inverted commas, is that every single line of dialogue that's in the broadcast version, at least, every single moment, every single line of dialogue is important. So if you're sitting there and you're not paying 100% attention to it 100% of the time, or thanks to the sound mix they decided to do on the broadcast version, if you don't have subtitles on at times, I can see why you can watch it and go, this is completely incomprehensible. I don't understand why this is going the way it is. But I think that there's enough context clues there and enough things in the dialogue of the broadcast version, having just watched it again 2 days ago, that it's all there, that you could at least follow it. And certainly if you listen to Ian Hogg, for example, in the Making of documentary, there was certainly enough there for him, though some of the other actors, I think, were slightly bewildered by it. That said, I think that there is the fundamental problem with it, as my best friend pointed out when I showed it to her a couple of years ago, that what you really needed at some point in the story, if only for audience clarification, was somebody to sit the Doctor down and go, okay, what's going on here? And Andrew Cartmell himself, again, in the making of, points that out as well. So it's not that I think that there's not enough clues there that you can't figure it out. It's that simply there's nobody who sits down in one place long enough to put everything sort of ducks in a row to go, hey, this is what's actually going on. And it requires that you're sitting there paying attention to the whole thing throughout, which if you're watching it an episode a week – in 1989 or 1990 when it was being broadcast in New Zealand and Australia, I could completely see why people would have been utterly baffled by it. It's in some ways, I think, a story that actually benefits from the fact that we do have the home video age, and you can sit there and you can watch it again and again. And I can assume, based on where I walked in on things, that Kirby and Robert and Ian, or Chrissy, excuse me, have probably in singing the praises of the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And the work print on the Blu-ray, I think, is probably the best sort of visual version of the story that we've had to date. Even though you do have the quality changes in terms of the picture, but there is a complete story there. Now, having said all of that, I still think the best version of Ghost Light is probably the novelization, which is the prose, which is almost 180 degrees away from what this thing started as. But I think you have the point there where it gets to unfold at its own pace. And I sort of made the same argument last year on a panel about the story in Chicago, that because it's paced the way that it is, it ends up being a rushed vehicle, whereas on the page it can breathe, to the point that by the time you get halfway through the page count, you've just now gotten to the end of episode one. So there's a lot of front-loading involved with it. So I don't think that it's a story that's completely incomprehensible. I think that it's a simple fact that it's a story that is so different from anything else really that's come before it, and in some ways since it in New Who, that I think it's a complete sea change between the two. And as I said, if anybody wants the definitive version of it, they ought to go read it. But whether that's a failure of production, as Alan T. Butcher alludes to, I don't know. But I think the idea that it's a complete failure and a woeful production, I think, is just simply not true.
Yeah. I agree. Certainly not a woeful production at all. Thank you. Matthew, that was very delicately put.
Yes. You kind of agreed with both sides. The people who don't understand it, therefore don't like it, and the people who got it, watched it multiple times with guidebooks and everything else, love it.
So, Mary, what you're saying is that Matthew's got splinters in his backside from sitting on the fence for too long.
I've been accused of worse, that's for sure.
Oh, and Matthew, Kirsty wasn't quite as enthusiastic about it as Robert and I.
I will say, I don't know if anybody's mentioned it, but I did hear a bit piece about why didn't this go to a fourth episode, and apparently there was a plan at one point for that to happen, and also for the story we'll talk about next week, Fenric, to get a fifth episode, and there's a very specific reason that didn't happen, which was that John Nathan Turner, who did expect to be finally walking out the door after 9 years as producer, was very budget conscious. And suddenly became concerned that if he went to his bosses and said, hey, we shot 16 episodes worth of material on a budget for 14, can we please have two extended episodes, that whoever the new producer would be coming in for what was still presumed to be a season 27 would be handed an even smaller budget for 14 episodes or whatever, going, well, last year they shot 16 episodes on this budget. Yeah. Why can't you do 14 on this budget? Yep. So... But the story suffered from it, I think, in both cases.
Okay. Robert Vance Jr. says, I agree with Mary. The story at times was tough to take in. Then there was a bit of a high-five alien thing going on. Replying to Robert, Alan T. Butcher says, mainly when you are watching it. I don't know what that has to do with Robert Vance Jr. and then at least the ballad is connected to the story in regards to the... there's some stuff. I won't read that. Laurie Nix, I am surprised about how vehement Alan is regarding this episode. I see a lot of social commentary that I thought he'd be closely studying. Then she says,
true.
Is Matthew trapped in a small chamber underground? That was little time Eddie, wasn't it? Anna T. Butcher, was Matthew stuck in a time Eddie? That's what you said. Terry Miles says, Dane law is Vikings law. Oh dear, and Robert's choking to death. And then Ian Kirk said, the north of England was once a separate country ruled by the Danes, Vikings. As Terry Miles says, they had Danish law, whereas south had Saxon law. There you go. Bit of British history for you lot.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Sort of nearly at the end of that side of things, and we can actually talk about other stuff. So, I'll tell you, that's a very interesting topic of conversation, the Ghostlight story was. But I still like, it's almost like you don't have to necessarily understand the story, because it's like hanging a painting up and just looking at it and watching and thinking, well, actually you could turn the sound off, just sit and watch it, because everybody looks really good in the story. I mean, Sylvester looks amazing in that light. I think he's never looked better in Doctor Who than he does in Ghostlight, and for that it's worth watching it itself. So yeah,
you know, sorry, just had a thought. In a way, it's like 2001 is a Space Odyssey in a very strange way, because it looks beautiful. But if you know, sitting there trying to make sense of it, maybe easier said than done. So perhaps the best thing to say about Ghostlight is what Arthur C. Clarke once said about 2001. If you didn't understand the film, go read the book. If you didn't understand the book, go watch the film again. Repeat as necessary.
Yes, but the thing is, the fact that people do understand it means it's worth watching again. Until you do, maybe. I don't know. But it's certainly worth watching.
That does remind me, the first time I saw 2001, I had read the book, so I had no trouble with it whatsoever.
Okay. Right then.
Rub that in, Kirby.
Okay, right then. Moving on to Doctor Who news, I wanted to mention, because I forgot to last week, how absolutely wonderful Mandalorian is. It is best sci-fi thing on anywhere at the moment. Beautifully written. And I think I personally think that Jon Favreau is a magician in the way he brings adoration to the characters he brings to the screen. And obviously he brought Iron Man to the screen. I think in some ways Robert Downey Jr. made Tony Stark unlikable. But Jon Favreau made him likable by the way that he was, you know, directed on screen or whatever. Obviously, his character developed over time. But the Mandalorian is very sort of Iron Man-like, but a little bit more vulnerable in regards to his personality, not regards to how easily he's killed or whatever. But I'm not a Star Wars fan. I do watch Star Wars as and when I need to, and I understand the story. There's nothing about it. I think I lost the plot with that. It's a bit of a dour story in all. It's usually they win out for a little bit, and then it all goes pear-shaped again, so they can win out again. And it goes. Each film is essentially about that. Things go in pear-shaped, they win out, and it goes pear-shaped again, they win out. But Mandalorian is an adorable piece of television. And if you,
what about even the child as well?
Yeah, if you don't like Star Wars, you'll like Mandalorian, because it stands out on its own. It doesn't need to be connected to the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, it's a Western.
It's like a movie every week, isn't it?
But it's a nice Western, you know, because I'm not that fan of. Although I do like the early Clint Eastwood spaghetti westerns. They're a fab. The Mandalorian is very, it's Clint Eastwood. Sorry,
the music sounds very spaghetti western. I love the music.
It's got everything. It really has. It's absolutely wonderful. So anybody who hasn't watched The Mandalorian yet, get to watch. You don't have to like Star Wars, but you will like The Mandalorian. That's one thing.
You have to have a subscription to Disney to do it.
It's the sad part of it, I'm afraid. But I think Disney have done really well there, because if you are going to choose a subscription with something, that would be the thing to subscribe to.
Eventually, the sets are going to come out that you can buy.
Yeah, there's no sex in it. It's totally for...
Sets.
S-E-T-S. But there's some great... But Deb
Master,
said... Dev said, right, you're not buying any more Funko Pops. And then the Mandalorian Funko Pops started coming out, and she's waned. I think she'd like to have some Mandalorian-based Funko Pops in the house. Yes, Kirby?
Were you confused? I'm starting this out saying I was not confused, but some people were confused by the events of the most recent episode.
Yeah, I don't know if whether your most recent episode is the same most recent episode as the one
episode
I've watched.
Episode 3, season 2.
Okay, yeah, that's the most recent
one. I've heard it said that you need to have seen the animated versions of Star Wars understand, but I disagree with that.
I think you need to see the animated versions of Star Wars. I spoke to someone today about it to relate to the Mandalorian, other Mandalorian style characters in the story.
One that they have referred to, one of the characters that they refer to is
I didn't know anything about that, but it didn't detract from my from my understanding that these are just other characters in the story. It's absolute brilliance. Flipping on a little bit further, Wales Comic Con have expanded their guest list for, and obviously I think it sounds like they're getting a bit more confident it might actually happen. The first one they announced was a lady called Karen Gillan. Don't know if you've heard of her. She's one of the stars.
Who's
of
that?
The,
isn't she very tall with red hair?
No, she plays a sort of robot-y sort of thing in one of
blue,
the Star Wars.
Wasn't she?
Sorry, one of the Marvel films. Nebula, I think it was, she plays. She's also in a film called, two films in fact, called Jumanji. Apparently she's in Doctor Who at some point as well. But yeah, she's going to be there.
Really?
With Matt Smith, Arthur Darvill.
Who are they?
You're gone quiet. Peter Davison, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, Paul McGann, and Matt Smith. Five Doctors.
That's a bit of a guest list, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. So, and that's only now. We're a long way off before they stop announcing guests. So I bought.
When is that supposed to be?
Next April. So I've bought a photo op with Karen Gillan, and thinking, oh great, I get my picture taken with Karen Gillan. Isabella and Deb also want to be in that picture. So
I'm going to predict that it's not going to happen.
Yeah, nice to be on.
Mark my words.
Nice to be on the pessimistic side, but yeah, it's exciting for us.
As a would be con organizer myself, I'm with Kirby on this one.
Yes, I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't, but we're going to keep our fingers crossed. Data, this is Doctor Who News, by the way. Data Extract turns 40. The newsletter of the Doctor Who Club of Australia. Data Extract turns 40 this month. So there you go. That's an interesting little cartoon.
That is 1980 then.
Yes.
That's 40 years.
Daleks Episode 1 launches. The first episode of a brand new animated series, The Daleks, part of the Time Lord Victorious Multimedia series, has launched today as of Thursday. I did a burp then.
Is this actually viewable here?
On YouTube. It is free to watch.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Subscribe
to the official Doctor Who YouTube channel.
Yes. Doctor Who magazine issue 558 with the Doctor as in the 10th? Yeah, 10th and 4th in sort of plastic form on the front cover. Series 13 has begun filming. Woohoo! BBC has announced that filming has begun on Series 13 of Doctor Who, the 39th series since Doctor Who began in November 1963. The 13th Doctor is on her way back with Jodie Whittaker once again reprising her role as the Doctor. Another Marmite Doctor, by the way. See, I wanted to reference Marmite myself there. But I like her. But next season's run will be curtailed to just 8 episodes due to the current restrictions of COVID-19. Well, at least it's something, isn't it?
Yes.
With safety protocols in place. Pardon? Hey? Oh. So, is somebody saying something? Sorry, I'm
we're just agreeing with you.
Oh, sorry. With safety protocols in place, the Doctor Who team are now filming under strict industry government guidelines to ensure the safety of all cast and crew. Due to the added time and protocols required, the team will be completing a total of 8 episodes rather than the usual 11. But again, at least it's something. It's a shame it's dropped again, but at least they've got an excuse to drop it to
broadcast
8. But
I hope they don't decide to stick it there.
What?
For broadcast in 2023.
Where does it say that? Doesn't say
no,
that.
I think Robert's being cynical.
Yeah. Yes. Doctor Who magazine presents The Daleks, first published in 20th Century 20, TV Century 21 in 1965 to 67. The Daleks was devised by some chap called Terry Nation. We know that. And there was Children in Need. Yes, as somebody referred to earlier on in the story, in this episode, that there was a very small segment relating to Doctor Who, but a very fab one. It's a VIP tour. So the BBC is offering one person their very own VIP tour of Doctor Who
set
in Cardiff. The lucky winner is to be drawn from a list of entries to a prize draw in aid of BBC Children in Need. And I entered. It was £10. And it's available for UK people only. Yeah, so there's lots of goodies available with it as well. And the funny thing was, I entered this on Deb's phone number because for some reason mine wouldn't allow me to enter it, so I used Deb's, which is it's on my account, so it's still me paying for it. And then about an hour later, something about Take That came on there, and there was 140 prizes of memorabilia that Gary Barlow from Take That was offering up. So I had to spend out another £10 on that because she felt like she had missed out. So. but yeah, so that was quite good. So that's Doctor Who news.
Speaking of Doctor Who and Children in Need, and I think, Mary, I saw your post about it a day or two ago. I got my copy, of the Adventures in Lockdown anthology.
There you go. They're nice. Yes. And I was hoping that Deb would be on the show because these would be great stories for either Isla to read or for her to read to Isla.
Talking of stories, I posted the story what I wrote on the 20 megabyte page. For the first, it has been posted like it was 6 years ago, but it's the first time I've posted on there with my own name attached to it, and got absolutely no responses at all. So it makes me rather think I might have to delete that post.
I liked it.
Hang on.
I thought I'd liked it.
I think I'll take it off. It's a bit embarrassing. Right. You carry on from it. I'm sure there was something else that was coming up. So, of course, The Crown starts today, which we haven't watched yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing that. And, that's basically all we've been watching, apart from the odd film here and there. You carry on.
I just watched Bill and Ted, the new one.
Face the Music.
Is that what it's called?
I loved it.
Ah, good.
Oh, here it is. Right, I'm just deleting the post.
No!
That hasn't got that many comments. Not what? What do you mean, A? Yeah, I'll delete it.
What are you doing that for?
Because I'm embarrassed about it. Right, delete.
Where's the post?
Gone. It's gone.
Oi!
No, oi, it's gone. Right then, so where do we get up to? Whowon.co.uk.
Whowon.co.uk?
I'm angry.
Oh, well, you are. Right, coming soon. We've got Eighth Doctor Time War.
You deleted it, did you? Really?
Yeah, it's my writing. I can. Nobody, a lot of people said anything
about
it.
Can you send it to me?
Why? Okay. Let me do the 2-1 bit. Eighth Doctor Time War.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Just that bit. Daleks Destroy by Terry Nation. That's like a audio story thingy. Ex Machina.
Yeah, it's a collection of the stories from the various Dalek annuals and whatnot.
In audio form.
It's read by Nicholas Briggs, John Coleshaw, and I want to say Stephen Pacey. I've actually got it to review for Warp Factor in the next couple of weeks. So keep an eye out for that on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who Facebook group, which you can join.
Ex Machina, which is a Torchwood story. From this tiny, tiny thumbnail I've got here, it looks like it's got Gareth David Lloyd on the front cover. The Paternoster Gang Heritage 4. Shadow of the Daleks 1 with a picture of Peter Davison on the cover. Shadow of the Daleks 2 with a picture of Peter Davison on the cover. Peter Davison is supposed to be at Wales Comic Con, which Kirby reckons not going to happen. And Time Lord Victorious, All Flesh is Grass. Lots of stuff on pre-order from who1.co.uk, including Time Lord Victorious, Minds of Magnos, with a picture of David Tennant on the cover. This is quite exciting. Warmaster 5, Hearts of Darkness. Where do they get deads from? Warmaster 5, Hearts of Darkness, with a lovely artwork with Paul McGann and Sir Derek Jacobi on the front cover.
It looks a bit like, I think it's the Alistair Pearson Demons DVD cover, or VHS cover, I should say, because it's got the two of them, and then the lightning bolt going between their eyes.
Yeah.
Ah, maybe so. So that's who1.co.uk. I don't actually have to go.
Who1.co.uk?
I don't actually have to go to the Lavazzi page to tell you what's fab about their stuff, because obviously Christmas is coming and the winter's coming if you're in this country and the northern hemisphere. Scarves are usually quite good, aren't they? What's your name again? Robert, isn't it? Scarves are quite good, especially if you're a Doctor Who fan. And as Lavazzi make probably the best replica Fourth Doctor scarves you can get, you should really get one. Even Matthew was considering getting one, and he doesn't even like the Fourth Doctor.
I do
like the Fourth Doctor.
So yeah, but they also do the Seventh Doctor pullover with the question marks all over it.
And he's already got one.
Mm. And lots of.
I wouldn't mind getting another one because mine, the two I have, they get tatty very easy,
especially when they get worn all the time. But yeah, you can also get the Seventh Doctor silk paisley scarf and along with things like that. But the best thing about Lavazzi is they've got a Doctor Who blog and they've got fan fiction section as well. So go and join their website and join their become part of their mailing thingy as well. These
thingy.
Technical terms I'm not very good with. But yeah.
They have a really good email newsletter, which I do recommend, which I think is what you were trying to allude to.
That's what I was trying to say, Matthew. I think I'm very tired. I do explain. I have had a very long day at work today, and people expected me to come home, have dinner really, really quickly, get myself indigestion. Now I've got to go into the other room and get loads of Rennies to settle me indigestion because I gulped my dinner down to get on the show to wait for 15 minutes for everything to go back to how it should be. Who's next? Oh, yeah, Isle of Wight heroes.co.uk. That's IW Heroes. .co.uk. They're on click and collect at the moment. Obviously, they can't open their shop to the public, but you can order stuff to collect at the shop if indeed you're on the Isle of Wight. But you can also order stuff if you're in Great Britain for them to send to you, and they're very reliable, and they've got a massive range of Funko Pop vinyls. And so they've got the Pop Heroes frontline workers, they're really quite cool. The only thing I have a problem with that is they're all hospital workers. None of them are like supermarket workers or anything like that. They did rather forget us supermarket workers who've been working all the way through the lockdown and everything as well. But it's really cool. I have got one of them on my side here. They've got the Funko Pop vinyl Batman 80th Wayne Manor with Alfred. So they've got... Alfred and Bruce Wayne's manor. It's quite cool. I've got the dock with the clock tower from Back to the Future on my side here.
Cool.
It's cool. Yes, I agree. But lots of really good pop vinyls coming out soon. And also, they're re-releasing the 10th Doctor at an acceptable price. In this country, £9.99. But it's not obviously Heroes that are releasing it, but just anybody wants to... some Doctor Who pop vinyl is very difficult to get hold of because they don't make a lot of them because they think that not a lot of people like Doctor Who. But the 10th Doctor is being re-released. I did actually, when they re-released the 9th Doctor, I did get the 9th Doctor with Banana. And I haven't got the 10th Doctor, so I'm quite keen on getting hold of that. Or have I? Oh, I have got it. It's up there. How bizarre. Oh, I won't be buying that then because I've already got one. But I paid a lot more money for that one than the new re-release one.
He's got too many. He doesn't know what he's got.
I need the 11th and 12th in Funko Pop format. But anyway, that's enough of Funko Pops and
Heroes. I've already got one.
I got one what?
You said you've already got one.
I have.
So I was saying it from Holy Grail.
thank you for that. What else was coming through here?
My life is entirely...
Star Trek Discovery! That's what it was. Right, I've got to have to say, Robert Vince Jr., thank you for the reminder, because that's what I wanted to talk about.
What about it?
Right, so we've got...
What about it?
Robert Vince Jr. said, next week's story is a lot better than this week's. The story reminded me of the movie Fog with Jamie Lee Curtis. And then Star Trek Discovery was good last week and this week. Then Laurie says, maybe if there was some sex in it, I'd give it a watch. So what, in Discovery?
What?
Or Doctor Who? What's she on about? Then she says, perhaps there will be an online Comic-Con like we did this summer in San Diego. Alice Butcher says, UK PMBJ is self-isolating for COVID again. Could be his chance to watch Ghost Light on repeat. BJ, that's Boris Johnson. And then he says, it's true, police were badly treated in Victorian times. Endless tales of them being locked into drawers for years. And then Laurie said, Face the Music was epic, dudes. Right then, so...
Yeah.
Star Trek Party Discovery. On. Star Trek Discovery. Right then, all I want to say
be
about
excellent
this,
to each other.
I've always loved Star Trek Discovery, but this series, because obviously, if you, no spoilers, but it's completely separated from the first two, apart from the characters are the same. So you don't have to, you actually have to watch the first two. Quite sort of brilliant, but quite sad, sort of depressing in some ways. Series. No. This one is much more like Star Trek. It's
like the old series,
they're very boldly going in the new series, and because you've already grown to love the characters from two very difficult periods of time for those characters, that you now completely love them for series three. It's the best Star Trek I have seen since Star Trek The Next Generation. This current series is so, but what you can do if you don't want to watch one and two, watch series three, and it will make you want to watch one and two, and then you watch series three again. So yeah, get a chance to watch Star Trek Discovery. Magnificent. And I did like Star Trek Picard, but this is better, because I thought Star Trek Picard was better than Discovery one and two, but Discovery three is better than all of it. Just saying. Brilliant stuff.
I like the first two seasons as well.
I haven't seen them yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Kirby!
About that.
Middle of the
call
first
yourself a Star Trek fan.
I have seen Picard. I like Picard.
Okay.
And I'm in the middle of the first series.
I've only seen the one episode that got aired on CBS 2016, 2017, I think it was, and I wasn't impressed with it.
The one where they completely redesigned the Klingons?
That one.
Yeah, that's the reason why
we just have to live with that.
I wasn't impressed with that first one either.
Get over it.
Do you know what? The Klingons have been redesigned twice in Star Trek. Does it matter?
Yeah.
No. Right, in regards to...
Exactly.
That's not what Star Trek Discovery is all about in regards to the Klingon side of things.
No.
What it is brilliant. It's all it's character.
It's mostly in the first season, anyway.
Yeah, no, it's hard to watch. Sometimes life's hard to watch. Horrible things happen. Mm. It's all about the characters and the strength of Michael Burnham as a woman, a female character, who carries the whole story through. And it's very refreshing that you've got a female character who is just the flagship in herself for three whole series of Star Trek.
Very good characters.
Yeah, all of the characters are good, but she is beautiful. She's strong. She's kick-ass. She develops from quite a damaged person into a really lovable person as her time in the series goes. So that's fab. Watch Discovery. If you can't bear series 1-2, I can understand that. Series 3 is so good. And you don't, like I say, they do a little bit of a recap. But because it's a complete, almost like a reset, you can just pick it up from there. And I've heard, because there was a video of Seth MacFarlane, something to do with jumping in a pool fully clothed if Biden won the election. There was then a side mention of the fact that Orville is coming back soon. Nobody said anything, but I think it is. So I'm looking forward to that.
What is coming back?
Orville. The Orville.
Oh, okay.
I haven't watched that yet.
More Magnificence.
I've watched like the first season and a half. I liked it.
Because it's good, isn't it, Mary?
Yes.
Oh, it is good, yeah. Mm.
I like it. It's good.
Yeah, so before we leave.
Because I don't want to watch it. I do want to watch it, yeah.
Well, it started out extremely clever. Mm. You know, it would mix a lot of humor with the serious idea. But lately, it seems like it's getting more and more serious.
Mm-hmm. They do have it. It's getting it right. They're getting the balance right now because they have got a lot of humor. But it's just because it's more serious, the humor becomes more funny, if that makes sense. Alan C. Putcher says Star Trek D, or STD, Star Trek Discovery, is unbelievably good, really in the future, as I have been wait for since the mid-1990s. And then he said season two of Discovery was... sorry, that's Robert Vince Jr. Season two of Discovery was connected to the old series. But yeah, again, yeah, it's nice to have... It's not just the fact that... No spoilers, because you love your spoiler, but series two does feature a certain starship that's quite well known in the timeline.
Lovely design for it, too.
And a certain captain.
Who are now getting their own spin-off series.
Yeah. Oh, yes, good. And they deserve it because the actors they bought in to play the character was fantastic. It's just great.
Well,
stuff.
I was thinking really... it was silly. They've got all these sets that they designed for it.
You keep on going about sex all the time. This is a family show. Mm-hmm. Right. So next week we'll be talking about
S-E-T-S.
Talking about. Oh God, I was talking about Star Trek, and I was going to say Star Trek again. Sorry.
20 megabyte about Star Trek podcast.
Oh no, it's all about vampires and stuff. What's it called again?
No, it's Hemavores.
No, it's not Hemavores. No, what's the story called?
Curse of Fenris.
Curse of Fenris.
Yes, thank you. I really shouldn't talk about Star Trek on a Doctor Who podcast, but I'm going to because I love it. Right, yeah, so Curse of Fenris next week, and then the week after that is the end of the classic era part of watching Doctor Who. But we do have a couple of special episodes. Like I said before, Tough Titty, you're going to be watching Dimensions in Time and Fatal Death. And after we watch those two, it'll be
Doctor Fatal Who, Death, yes.
The movie.
Shouldn't you watch Dimensions in Time, then the TV movie, then the Curse of Fatal Death?
Does it matter?
If you're doing them in release order.
Okay, well, I wasn't quite aware of that.
And also, there's the other one with the original Ninth Doctor.
Ah, Scream of the Shulka.
Oh, yeah, yes, I forgot about that. Shulka. Yeah, we should really watch that as well.
Yes.
But that'll be after the Curse of the Fatal Death.
There you go.
Right, Curse Dimensions... of Fatal Death.
Whatever. The cursey, fatal, deathy thing. So
there's a pedant's revolt on 20 megabyte today.
We're going to be. So it's get me a fax right now.
Peasants are revolting.
We've got the
May I ask? Speaking of classic Who, yeah, I am going to be guesting on another podcast this coming week, where we're going back to watch one of the new animated releases. Faceless Ones. So I was wondering if, as for the ones where the new releases have come out, since we actually did them during our journey, that we might want to revisit
at some point, but not now. Right, Kirby, let me carry us on. We're doing the journey at the moment. That means we're on the journey. We don't stop off at a petrol station, though, go back to town we just visited.
We don't want to just go back and talk about how good or bad the animation is, because we've already seen the story.
Yes. So what we're going to do, we're going to carry on.
Well, I enjoy the Faceless Ones a lot better with the animation.
Okay, well, what we're going to do is do the journey, finish the journey, then go back and do little specials on these things that have come out since we originally looked at them. All right. That's a long way off, though, but that's what we'll do. And I was going to say, yeah, so this week we've got the Image of the Fandal. No, it's not called that, is it? It's,
no.
What's it called again?
Curse of Fenric.
And then Survival, then Dimensions in Time, then...
The TV movie,
then the Curse of the Fatal Deathy thing, and then the Shulka doodah thingy. But in between all that, because we're moving.
Hold on, are we doing the webcasts as well?
No, but between all that, we've got the Doctor Who Christmas special coming up. So we'll be covering that. So, but the time we actually—it's
going to be a New Year special.
Yeah, I was say, they've changed the rumor it back to New Year, though.
Oh, God. Okay, well, whenever. That will be on our little schedule. So before we actually start on New Who, we've got lots and lots of stuff to do. So I've got a funny feeling we won't be able to do New Who until the New Year.
Ooh.
Just saying. Right then, okay. So I've... God, it's 10 past blooming nine. We haven't done too badly because we didn't get started till 7:15.
As you remind
us. I can go upstairs, have a bath, come downstairs and watch something... I've
Murder
recorded.
On CTV?
I've got a funny thing CCTV? Of... I think Murder on CCTV had its last episode last week. But there's some other stuff I can watch. Anyway, that's a bit boring. That's what I'm going to say. Anything. Robert Venture Jr. says, goodbye till next week, indeed. And hopefully I'll have a bit more time to sort of settle into the show rather than rushing around eating food too quickly because of my shift next week earlier.
If he says goodbye, is it up to us now to finish it off?
Beg your pardon? I'm going to finish off anyway. Yes, so until next week, thank you for watching, taking part, and sort of shepherd hooking Matthew into the show this week. Until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye.
Okay.
So long. Thanks for all the fish.
That's the way to the zoo.
We were going to talk about them deaths. So we were going to talk about deaths this week. It doesn't mean you have to die just because I said about talking about deaths.
We're just saying goodbye, Robert.
Not that sort of goodbye.
Yeah. Not Emily.
Should have mentioned Debbie and Dicky Ticker.
Let me update the episode listing here. What order are we going to do things in?
Oh, you can write it down for me. Right then. So, next week is The Curse of Fenric.
And then Survival, yes.
And Survival. The week after that is Dimensions in Time. The week after that...
Hang on.
Oh, God.
Okay, let me insert another row.
Ready? What?
I'm inserting rows in the spreadsheet, yes?
Are you? Right. So you've done Dimensions in Time?
Yes.
And then it's the Doctor Who movie.
Yeah, got it.
Right, then it's Curse of the Thingy Dacles Fatal Dettle Death Thing.
Hang on.
Curse of Fatal Death?
Yes, death curse, of fatal, yes. Curse of Fatal Death.
And then it's the Shalka Doodah Thingy.
Yes. Yes, Scream of the Shalka.
Yes.
Yes.
Didn't we already do Scream of the Shalka?
Nope.
No, I tried watching it.
Can I ask? The plot. Will we be doing the Tenant animated ones?
Yeah.
Oh, we are. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. And then it's going to be Doctor Who. I can't remember the title of it. It's the New Year
Rose.
Special.
Revolution of the Daleks.
Thank you.
Oh.
Then it's what? Revolution of the Daleks.
Oh, if it airs New Year's Day, then it was should fall between Shalka and when we would do Rose.
Yeah,
he says okay. We like he might actually. Be.
And then it's Rose. Do you want to write this down? Because I'm not going to go any further than Rose. Because I want to go to bed.
The end of the world, the unquiet dead.
Yeah, all right, smarty pants.
They're all written.
But it won't just be Rose.
Yeah, because we've done a partial. All the way journey once already. So this will be like the third time through.
Yeah, but that's
some
different
of these.
People. Right then, so the Rose one will be Rose. So it'll be episodes 1 and 2. So that'll be 2 episodes we're doing. 2 stories.
Rose and the
one.
End of the world. Okay. So
can I just say something, though? That some stories, if we're going to be doing that, some stories will be like we're doing half of one week and then the other.
No, we'll have to work around that. Because, so if we get to a point where we've got to do a 2-part story, then we'll work it around that maybe we will just do the one week and then do a 2-part. It just depends how it falls. I'm not going
to
do...
Yeah, we'll just have to play around with it.
Yeah, but it's going to be interesting to see how we can get through 2 stories in 1 episode with Kirby on, but fingers crossed because the episodes are only, only 15 minutes each.
On them all.
Yeah. Have you? Mm.
Yeah. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.